So for the next 30 minutes of our meeting, I'm going to be joined by Michael Weinberg, president of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. We are recording this, so I will say for those who are listening, we're at the June 26, 2017 meeting of Greenbelt Alliance's Board of Directors. I'm Jeremy Madsen. I'm the CEO of Greenbelt Alliance, the Bay Area's leading land use advocacy organization working to help communities of the Bay Area handle how our region grows. And Micah's organization, the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, is a leading think tank focused on the most critical economic and policy issues facing the nine-county region. The Institute is guided by a board of trustees drawn from influential leaders from the corporate, academic, nonprofit, and government sectors.
Including you.
I was going to say, I'm proud to be one of those trustees. So, and a couple years ago, myself and Jen Fox, who was then head of the Bay Area Open Space Council, we went to the Institute. We suggested that there needed to be a report on how the Bay Area's open spaces impact and benefit the region's economy. And we were thrilled when the Institute said, you know, we'd like to take on that challenge. And that is coming to fruition as a report called Bay Area Balance. You know, my first question to Micah is, so why were you at the Institute interested in doing a study about the importance of open space for our region?
Well, I think that a lot of folks understand how important open space is as an economic asset for the Bay Area when you think about recruiting talent. When you think about the importance of that in the Bay Area, where there are a lot of challenges in getting talent to move to the region because of the affordability. But there's actually a lot of other benefits to open space that folks are really just now, I think, beginning to understand and quantify. So I'll just throw a couple out there. The healthcare cost reduction value of getting people out into open space is now something you can concretely quantify. And obviously, healthcare costs are huge for businesses. So we just got to prescribe more people to get out and walk, hike on trails. And then just things like, when you look at the resilience of the Bay Area to a major storm event, you have to have open spaces in order to make sure that you can, you know, capture that storm water. And all those things have really concrete and important benefits for the economy.
Great, great. So, you know, I think in all of us at Greenbelt Alliance, we really understand, you know, the threats that Bay Area open space are facing. You know, we had our recent at-risk report. Talks about the pressure to develop the Greenbelt. We found that 293,000 acres, that's an area 10 times the size of San Francisco, is jeopardized by sprawl. But we also know there are a lot of other threats that are facing our region. The one that's on the minds of everyone these days is the housing affordability crisis. Micah, you just alluded to it. And it was, you know, you and your colleagues at the Institute who suggested that in this report, we address both the importance of open space and the importance of building housing for the Bay Area. Can you tell us a little bit why you thought that was important to address both of these issues in the same report?
Well, I mean, for a number of reasons. One, because housing affordability is obviously a big challenge on its own. And two, because we don't have to choose. We don't have to choose between having open space and addressing the housing affordability crisis. We just have to be smart about how we do development. And if we can, and so this is the kind of project that is my absolute favorite kind of project to do at the Economic Institute, bringing, you know, thought leaders like yourself and developers and all kinds of folks together to say, how do we actually make progress to grow in the right way so that we can accommodate the growing population in a way that's environmentally sustainable while preserving this really important economic asset for the Bay Area?
Fantastic. So let's cut a little bit of the chase here. So we've got a report. Do we actually have the report yet?
We do. We have some in-production copies for the board members. It'll be coming out here in the next couple of weeks.
That is awesome. We've been at this for, I think it was about 2 years ago.
It's been a little while, so yeah.
Actually seeing it on paper is going to be an extremely exciting thing that, in there. You know, tell us a little bit about what the findings are. You know, you've mentioned a few reasons, but go a little bit more into, you know, why indeed is open space important to our region? What are the implications if we don't address the housing crisis? And what do we really need to do to get to that, you know, situation where you just mentioned, where we don't have to choose between open space and housing?
So a lot, as I said, a lot of people have begun to quantify the value of open space, and it falls into a number of buckets, some of which I've outlined. The yearly value of open space in the Bay Area is as much as $14 billion a year when you put all these different things together. So that's an enormous economic asset. On the other hand, there is growth that needs to happen in the Bay Area. And one of the things that I think people don't understand is that if the growth doesn't happen here, it doesn't necessarily happen somewhere else. You know, places like Seattle and Denver and elsewhere really have grown up and become economic assets for the country because the Bay Area itself has grown up. And so it's critically important to build that housing in a sustainable way, and it's also critically important for equity. I mean, I don't want to get that lost in this conversation as well, which is that California is a very liberal state. However, it has the highest rate of poverty in the entire nation. And it largely has that high rate of poverty because of its choice not to build housing, which ends up massively increasing the cost of living. So again, there are really important goals that we're working on, but we don't have to choose. So what's an example? We've got in the Bay Area something called priority development areas. And these are the areas that we got together through this huge process and decided we want to focus our growth in these areas. And we've only been kind of successful in doing that. Over the period of time that this report looks at, we only permitted about 57% of the growth that we wanted to see in these already built out areas. And that's a threat to open space because, you know, you've got kind of the priority conservation areas and then you've got the priority development areas, but there's a lot of areas in between that have a lot of important open space in them. So the report really talks about what are some consensus solutions that we can work on, which a lot of it falls under, and we should talk about this more. How do we get infill to really happen? Unfortunately, the sort of constellation of regulations and incentives that we have make it much easier and more economically profitable to plow under a greenfield to build single-family housing than to do a mixed-use, mixed-income infill development in an already built-out area, say, for example, on a brownfield. So a lot of the recommendations in the report get to how do we make it more economically feasible and more economically profitable to build the type of housing that we want to see versus plowing under another cherry orchard in Brentwood to put up a bunch of single family homes.
Great. So I think that gets to my next question here, which is I think we do reports all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the business of doing reports.
Yes. Yes.
I think. Worst case scenario for any report that gets done, it ends up on shelves, it ends up stuck in inboxes. I think this one is really timely, really important. At the national level, in places all across the country, we've gone backwards.
Yeah.
We've got people who are leaders who are telling us that we have to choose between environmental well-being and the health of our economy. And I think this report shows that here in the Bay Area, we're going the opposite way. We're saying it's a false choice to choose between the environment and the economy. So, kind of going a little bit deeper, and you were talking about the importance of making infill easier, two or three things that we can do next, walking off this stage right now,
yeah,
what can we do to move what we're finding in this report forward?
Yeah, I think, we mentioned this two-year gestation process for the report. And if I were just writing a report, I could write a report in 2 weeks, no big deal. But it's not that kind of a report. It is it's been a process of bringing together key stakeholders from different communities around a set of policy recommendations that are not only the basis for collective action going forward, but things we've already begun to collaborate on more effectively over the course of the past couple of years. And that's the report is sort of, the ribbon on the present or
right.
Something. The present is actually the collaboration. The present is the work that we've been doing and with the Bay Area Open Space Council and pulling in There's a, you know, Jeffrey Heller is on both the board of the Bay Area Council and the board of the Greenbelt Alliance, and just working on developing these coalitions to do things that might seem kind of boring, like plan Bay Area, right? I mean, that's not the sort of thing that most people, maybe with a few exceptions here in this room, get up every morning and say, we need to be permitting more in priority development areas, right? However, the things that people that aren't as deeply engaged in this process really care about actually depend on what happens with priority development areas and depend on being smart about, for example, the number of development fees that we layer on these urban projects. If we, you know, we might for some other reason say, well, you know, we should charge housing developers $20,000 to build a house in Berkeley. Well, Berkeley is really well transit served. And if we don't have the same sort of financial disincentives, again, in the cherry orchard in Brentwood, then the economy is going to do what it's going to do. And so that's the, you know, set of things that is very exciting to think through, and to think through, like you said, in a collaborative collaborative nature. You briefly mentioned the terrible national situation, which I will not go into, but I will agree with you that it, in some ways it's like a balm to the soul to be doing things differently out here and to not be taking the conversation 40 years backward in terms of thinking this is a zero-sum game, but really figuring out how we can work on this together.
That's cool. So I've got a little script here for those of you in the room who can see it. I'm going to go off script for a second. This is the fun part now. But so you're with the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. That is associated with the Bay Area Council. Mm-hmm. Tell those of us in the room, you know, what is the Bay Area Council? Where do you come from?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of where you
Where do we come right? from? Well, World War II was just finished. This is true. And the, you know, the sort of great industrialists in the Bay Area saw that we needed to convert from a wartime economy because we had a lot of folks working in the munitions industry, shipbuilding and so on. And they had this vision of the Bay Area. I mean, remember, at this point, San Jose was a town of like 40,000 people. I mean, you know, very, very different Bay Area. But they sort of saw the future and, among other things, created the BART system. And since that time, the Bay Area Council has remained a group of private sector leaders. But our mission is we're private sector leaders working with the public sector, working with the charitable sector, working with the nonprofit sector on a triple bottom line mission. You know, we're not a regional, you know, business trade association. We're not a chamber of commerce. We're working on keeping the Bay Area the most economically competitive, but also sustainable place that has a great quality of life for everybody here. And it turns out that's really important if you're going to be an employer. But that triple bottom line mission is really baked into our DNA, and this report and the process that created it is very much, you know, our basic mission.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason I wanted to ask that question and highlight that to everybody who's in the room and who's listening right now is the fact that, you know, sitting here listening to you, you sound like you could work here at Greenbelt Alliance, and that's very much a compliment.
Yeah, take it. I mean, what are you offering?
probably less than you get at the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. So, but I think that's, again, going back and observing what we were just talking about in terms of how this compares to the national scene. You know, the fact that we've got, you know, somebody associated with some of the leading employers of the Bay Area, you know, really talking like, I think very authentically about the importance of open space, the importance of sustainability, and while I think there's things that our, you know, Greenbelt Alliance, Bay Area Council might disagree on, you know, there's the 80-20 rule comes into play here. There's a lot that we agree on, a lot that we see as important for both the health and the sustainability of our region and our economy, and, you know, really creates opportunities to work together.
Look at the decision to pull out of the Paris agreements. Like, CEOs were tripping over themselves to object to that, including the former CEO of Exxon, who now is our Secretary of State, right? He's like, well, I wouldn't have done that. And that's got to tell you something, right? I mean, for some reason, some particular elements want to take us back 40 or 50 years on this, but actually the corporate community generally, not just the Bay Area Council, has, though we're not going to agree on every single development, should it be here or not. Again, 80-20, at a higher level, folks understand the significant issues associated with climate change, the real imperative to have healthy environments for folks to live in, and that's something that we need to keep pushing forward.
Great. Last question for you, and then I want to give folks in our audience a chance to ask us anything. So as we were doing this report, what surprised you? Anything in terms of the results or the process? Or
I mean, I think that it was a real education for me on how much there is that open space does for the economy. I mean, it was a real learning process for me. I knew that from talking to a lot of employers that one of the top selling points is the open space in the Bay Area. I didn't know about ecosystem services as much as I have learned. And so learning about the importance for resilience, the importance for reducing healthcare costs, and like this whole long, set of things was a nice surprise. It was a great opportunity for education. And I think that's what we're trying to do through one of the things that we're trying to do is really educate a broader set of people about the many different values that open space has.
Right. Yeah, really thinking last comment for me is that our open space is part of our infrastructure.
Exactly,
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
There we go. All right, so we probably have we're running a little bit behind schedule, but we've got 7-8 minutes for questions, comments that you guys might have. And we're going to use the mic so that we can get,
Great, the Oprah effect.
We're live and broadcasting.
Hi, Michael. Donna Gerber here. I guess I want to ask, because I remember back in when I was, an elected working on smart growth and protecting open space, the Bay Area Council really was not that helpful when it came to the heavy lifting that politicians have to do to approve smart growth, to protect open space lands in terms of the land use decisions. And I think a lot has changed. And I think that's my question to you. How do you see the Bay Area Council being able to be helpful going forward for all of our local elected leaders who ultimately make the land use decisions? Getting the support they need from the business community to approve, for example, growth in the right place,
right,
versus some economic interests who are invested in doing growth in the wrong places.
Yeah, it's a very good question, but the really key thing that you raised that's critically important for everybody to understand, most people here do, is that this is a series of local conversations. And one of the big challenges, we're a regional organization that cares about at least the 9-county Bay Area. And one of the things in this report is we've really got to think about the mega region as well. If we protect the Bay Area at the result of a bunch of sprawl in the Central Valley, we haven't done our jobs. We need to think about how to grow smart around the whole Northern California mega region and connect that with transit. And it is a challenge because the Bay Area itself has 110 local jurisdictions, for an organization that has that big of a footprint to be everywhere sort of all at once. And obviously the sort of economic interests that have an interest in that one of 110 jurisdictions are gonna have a proportionally louder voice in that conversation. But a lot of, honestly, the land use decisions that are environmentally unfriendly in my view, are not necessarily driven by business community interests, but driven in a lot of cases by local NIMBYism. And so if you have a situation where you have a, for example, places within the Bay Area that are committed to remaining, single family home only neighborhoods when they are transit served within 45 minutes of a major job center, then that's going to be a big challenge. And I don't say that to deflect it. What I want to say is that it's hard, and figuring out how to have these regional organizations engage effectively, on these kind of regional levels like Plan Bay Area that sets the table for better local land use decisions is something that we're really glad that we're working on with the Greenbelt Alliance.
Yeah, and one thing I'll say really quickly here is to give credit where credit is due, one of Micah's colleagues, Matt Reagan, is at a city council meeting every time there's a city council meeting to be at. Can't be all over the region, but always there supporting good projects in the right places. And I do think, and just to emphasize something we've already talked about, I hope that this report and this process and the kind of the epiphany that you had, Micah, is one that starts to percolate through the rest of the the business leadership in the Bay Area about the importance of open space and those ecosystem services and those that concept of open space as part of our infrastructure, kind of really helping people understand why is it important to invest in these lands. And I think we have a real opportunity through this report. Other questions?
Hi, Micah. My name is John Harvey. Question, East Bay Regional Park recently published a report on the economic value of open space and parkland. Just wondering if this report could be packaged perhaps with the one you're working on, and any thoughts you may have on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was really good, and I know that the East Bay Parks folks are looking at building on it. And it's important, I think, to package all of these together. I love the East Bay Parks. My morning hike is Claremont Canyon. So I think also speaking to this question of how to engage, business leaders more directly, when you think about a place like, the East Bay Parks, really finding, which are the business leaders that are hiking in Briones on a regular basis or Claremont Canyon or what have you, and really engaging them, because business leaders don't just work through organizations like the Bay Area Council, they also support organizations like the Greenbelt Alliance. And so more general reports like this one or more specific reports like the East Bay set of reports, and I know there are other analyses that have been done for Sonoma County and Santa Clara County and some of these other counties, finding the right message and the right set of data points that are gonna speak to the right communities is essential.
Hi, my name is Dee Swanheiser, and I live in the forests of Sonoma County. And I drive through the Bay Area, and specifically Sonoma County, and see our very small bucolic communities becoming commodities. And it refers to the point that Donna made about development in the wrong places. And I wondered if you could comment on the idea of developing a compelling, thoroughly researched economic argument for what we refer to as community character.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first off, we have to so I'm not super young, but I'm not super old. There are twice as many people in the world now than there were when I was born. Some of them are gonna have to live around here. Yet there are communities that appear as if they have been preserved in amber for that 40-year period. And that doesn't mean that we just throw out community character and so on, but it does mean that we need to think about, my brother lives in the forests of Sonoma County off of the Bohemian Highway. I think it's really amazing. I spent a lot of time up there. And certainly the places like Sebastopol are, as you're suggesting, and an economic asset for the region. And so we need to preserve them not only for sort of the environmental nature, but I think what you're saying is that the character of these communities themselves is a type of economic asset. And I will say to that, that's really interesting. I haven't thought about it that way before. I'd love to follow up with you about that line of thinking. That's really interesting.
And I am thinking of the smaller, the freestones of the
right.
world. So I look forward to talking.
Absolutely. Freestone Bakery has amazing bread, that like garlic bread, like the green. Oh, so good.
So following up on what Dee said in terms of community character, you've got some of these smaller towns that maintain that they need to have and preserve that character.
Yeah.
And then you've got the larger cities that have the infrastructure to absorb additional growth and run with it. And then you've got the 20 to 30 to 40 midtown cities
right.
that somewhat are served by transit, but not much. And the NIMBYs come out and say they want to preserve their character, however
right.
you define it. So how without a regional governance structure, and the fact that CEQA is used as a tool to stop all
yeah.
the right kind of projects, would you recommend that we do the implementation?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of it is expanding the circle of empathy. Okay, what am I talking about? Okay, so we're all in this together. If a bunch of communities refuse to change at all, then all of the energy is going to be on one part of the community. So a lot of people in the Mission are very frustrated because they say, why should the Mission change if Atherton has not changed in 60 years? And that's a totally legitimate question. It is not fair to ask the Mission to take all of the additional development that's happening in the area. We all need to take the appropriate amount of development as world population grows and as we think about the ecological carrying capacity of the region and the character of communities. So how do you get people to care about that? A lot of folks have started to care about their own kids. They're like, well, there's nowhere to live around here, and I want my kids to be able to live somewhere near me. Okay, so that's a little bit of the circle of empathy. Maybe we can expand that a little bit more to include people outside of your family, right? And include, you know, newcomers in all parts of the Bay Area. Now, some places are going to be more appropriate because they're better transit served. Some places are going to be less appropriate. But every place needs to be a little involved. You know, the challenge with the Bay Area is it's an enormous collective action problem, right? That any individual community can try to exempt itself from this, but that ultimately, you know, we're not going to be well served unless every community has the appropriate level of development, which is going to be on a huge sliding scale, obviously. And so, you know, part of it is just making people understand that, you know, expanding that circle of empathy that, you know, you look at, and I'll just end with this because I know we're running out of time. You look at the homeless population in places like San Francisco, and there was this idea that the homeless population was people flooding in from the rest of the country to the streets of San Francisco, maybe because of the better services that are there. But it turns out that the majority of homeless people in San Francisco have lived in the city for over 10 years, and many of them had homes before. So we might want to expand that circle of empathy a little bit as we do that in order to get, you know, development patterns that are both, you know, equitable, good for the economy, but then that also preserve this amazing asset that drew me here from Ohio, that drew so many other people here, which are the green belts and the open spaces of the Bay Area.